Good morning, everyone. I am recording, yes. I'd like to dedicate this year to the yahrzeit of my grandmother, whose yahrzeit is today, Yud Aleph Kislev, Rachel Bat Yitzchak Halevi. She died 46 years ago, and I was never privileged to meet her, because she died before I was born, and despite all the technological advances in this world, no one has yet to been able to overcome that one. Namely, if someone dies before you know them, how are you supposed to know them? So with video clippage and whatnot, you get to see them. But to get to know them, obviously, it's only through stories and whatnot. So what I'm about to tell you is what I've heard. And B, she had a sister who, thank God, lived until a very old age here in Israel in Tel Aviv. And I got to know her and I was told that she was very similar. And I just want to pinpoint one thing about her this morning. And that is that she used to have a saying, probably from Poland. She came to Israel in the 30s before the Shoah, eventually to America. So ultimately, this was her saying. She said, when people talked about people not keeping every last iota of halacha, people violating this law or that law, and obviously were very, very critical about it, she used to say, I'm not God's messenger, or I'm not God's policeman. Namely, my job is to be religious. My job is to do what's right. Hopefully, I'll be able to influence and inspire others. But my job is not to critique what others do, but rather be right myself. In other words, the best way to outreach is not to tell off someone, but to be good yourself. And hopefully others will follow. From this perspective, she was rather tolerant. Pardon? Dugma ishit. Very, very good, Harold. That's exactly a nice and concise way of putting it. And that's exactly the topic that I'd like to share with you this morning. It's a problematic topic. It may be a controversial one, but I believe we have to deal with it because it happens in many of our communities. What do I mean, many of our communities? I mean the big communities. There's a saying in Hebrew called Tzarot Shel Ashirim. Have you ever heard that saying, Bruce? Nod your head as if you did. No, Bruce is honest. He says no. What's Tzarot Shel Ashirim?
It's like Gesinte Tzaras.
Namely, these are Tzaras that only the rich people have. Right? I have too much money. So, Baruch Hashem, in our communities, we usually don't only have one Orthodox shul to go to. We have many. We have, thank God, a choice. And the question is that even mutter halachically? A. And B, even if it's mutter halachically, is it preferable halachically? Namely, perhaps, in order to be in peace with everyone, as my grandmother tried to be by not telling off people, is indeed the ideal that we all daven together in one place, or not? If you look at the picture on the screen, you'll see, thanks to Google Maps, a certain community, doesn't make a difference the name of it, but as you could see, 1, 2, 3, 4 shuls on the same block, adjacent to each other. All the shuls are Orthodox. This is not the Reform, the Conservative, the Orthodox. It's not even Taimani, Italian, Ashkenazi. 4 Ashkenazic shuls on the same block. I visited this community not so many years ago. I saw it, and I literally finally understood the most holy Jewish joke that's ever been uttered in the history of Jewish jokes. Norman, do you remember that joke about a Jew on a stranded island?
Yes.
And they finally find him? Norman, finish the joke for me.
He needs 2 shuls.
Why does he need 2 shuls, Norman?
One that he doesn't go to.
Exactly. One he goes into and one he never steps foot into. Correct? So here you got it. I came to this block, Mincha Ma'ariv time, and there's 4 shuls. You literally don't know which one you're supposed to go to, which one you're not supposed to go to, which one won't you step foot in, and which one do you visit from time to time. Now, this is a true story. This is literally a chapter in a book called Jew versus Jew, The Struggle for the Soul of American Jewry by Samuel G. Friedman. You can see the cover of the book on the left side of the screen. And literally, this goes against one of the most important medrashim I've ever heard. This medrash came to mind yesterday, because once again yesterday, unfortunately, one of the chief rabbis on a Motzei Shabbos shir decided to do an aveira, a huge aveira, called Bizayon Talmidei Chachamim, and once again take a Talmid Chacham and not reprimand him, but totally mivaze him. Totally talk about him in disgusting terms, saying he has no Yirat Shamayim and whatnot. And this Medrash came to mind. The Medrash says as follows in Bereshit Rabbah, right on the screen, in the green. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe said, Gadol HaShalom Sha'afilu Yisrael Ovdim Avodat Kochavim. V'Shalom Beneihem, Amar HaMakom Ki V'Yachol, Eini Yachol Lishlot Bahen, Kevan SheShalom Beneihem. God says if the Jewish people are in peace with one another, then even if they do avodah zarah, obviously an exaggeration, but an important one, I can't get them for it, because they're in peace with each other. Shene emar, a pasuk from Hosea, this past Shabbos, the Haftorah was from Hosea, chvor atzabim Ephraim hanechlo. Aval, mishenechleku, but if they're not at peace with one another, ma'u omer, what does God say? Chalak libam? They separated? Ataye Shamu. Now I'll get them. So here you go. You got four shuls on the same block. Is this mutter? Is this usser? Even if it's mutter, is this preferable or not? Maybe it's great. We have so many shuls. It's like a miracle. So many people want to daven. On the other hand, four shuls? What, they can't get together in one building? Yes.
What about Rav Hadras Melech?
Berov Am V'Hadrat Melech Harold means one of three things. We once gave a shir on it, and I'll be happy to send you the link. But one of the things it means is that you do a mitzvah at the same time as others. Namely, when you bring Bikurim, do it in a group. That doesn't mean you have to do it in separate shuls. You should do it in the same shul. That's Berov Am V'Hadrat Melech. It doesn't mean in separate shuls. So we're looking at this picture, and I wonder...
You're better off in a larger crowd than a smaller crowd. For example, when you make Kiddush.
Yes.
Instead of everybody making Kiddush, you make Kiddush.
Oh, now I understand what Harold meant. Harold says, well, it's much better in a big crowd. So let's have a huge shul, like the Belzer shul in Yerushalayim. Now the Vishnitz shul in Bnei Brak. The Gerush shul in Yerushalayim. One of those huge Batei Mikdash. And everyone can daven at the same time. It's an amazing scene. You want to see Berovam Vadrat Melech Halacha Lemaiseh? Look on YouTube at one of those shuls. Amazing. So this is a terrible thing to look at. On the other hand, maybe it's nice. So many shuls mean so many Jews want to do mitzvahs. So many Jews want to worship God in their own way. And therefore, each shul has their own little niche. Right? If I can just paraphrase it, let's pretend that shul number one on the bottom of the screen, that's the shul that they daven fast. Shul number four on the top of the screen, they daven slow. Shul number three, they dance a lot and they sing a lot. And shul number four, Norman, if you dare even say a niggin for Kel Adon, they shoot the chazan and they go home. This is the four shuls in front of us. Now, my question is this a good thing? Therefore, the name of the shir today is four shuls within 100 meters. Is it possible? Is it pitiful? Is it tolerable? Is it preferable? Yes, Bruce.
Well, rather than making different styles or just at a time, we all could go to any shul, really, looking at a prod. There's no shul that upsets most people, but they daven different times, so you have a particular time you'd like to go to a certain meeting.
So once again, Bruce, you're already giving an answer and saying, okay, this would be okay if each shul davens at a different time. But I'm going to give you a for instance. People know where I live. It's not a secret, but I don't think I need to record it for prosperity. The bottom line is, when I look out my window Friday night, there is three shuls across the street from me that daven at the same time. Same time. Shabbos morning, 2 out of 3, same time. So because of Corona, we're all still wearing masks and we're all leaving windows open in the shul and practicing social distancing to an extent, not exactly like we used to. But the bottom line is the windows are open. So it used to be beautiful because we left the windows open and ultimately you can hear davening. Well, where I live, you leave the windows open, you get dizzy. Why do you get dizzy? Because you hear one shul at Lecha Dodi, one shul at Mizmor LeDavid, One shul at Yedid Nefesh, and they're all next to each other, so you get dizzy, you have to close the window.
What's the reason for that?
I guess, my question is, when I look out the window and I see there's three Ashkenazic shuls within not 600 meters from each other, right? That would make sense, different areas. No, 100 meters of each other, three Ashkenazic shuls. Is this okay? More than that, if they were all filled to capacity, I can begin to understand. Not, they're not all filled to capacity. And I'm not even going to talk about today, but maybe we'll get to it, the strain on communal funds. What do you think, Norman? Let's say we build the shuls. People love their names on buildings. That's wonderful, right? The Kohen building for prayer, right? The Rabinowitz Center of Judaism. That's wonderful. Now, that's once you build the building. Now the building's built. Shkoyach. Can you put the name on the napkins that you serve at the Kiddush? Could you put the names on the paper towels that people wash their hands with? Be it the Kohanim, be it when you leave the washroom. That you can't put your name on. Now these shuls will need maintenance. Where is the maintenance coming from? From my pocket, right, Barry? From your pocket. It doesn't come from nowhere. So this is a strain on communal funds. Is this correct? Or maybe we should all daven in one place. Okay, it's not exactly my style. Well, due respect, live with it. It's not the end of the world. So you'll daven a little longer than you're used to, or a little shorter than you're used to. Not nice. 100 meters, three shuls. So let's talk about it today and see what Halacha has to say about it. Everybody ready? Okay. Everyone be prepared. The first thing I wanted to share with you is what I would consider the source of not having separate shuls. There's a Gemara in Masechet Gittin based on a Mishnah that says the following. Now, this is a very interesting Mishnah because the Mishnah is talking about things that you do mishum darkei shalom. Namely, God never said it was forbidden, but came along the sages and said, listen, with due respect, this is going to cause animosity within the Jewish people. And therefore, preferably, it would be far better not to do it, even though halachically it's okay. So we do many different things, mishum darkei shalom. Just by example, in one of those Mishnayos in Gittin, Bruce, there's a Mishnah about you and Harold. Do you know what I'm talking about? You're looking at me like I'm crazy. The Mishnah says that you give the first aliyah to the Kohen, mishum darkei shalom. The Gemara explains that theoretically, maybe the Talmud Chacham in the room should get the first aliyah, the biggest person in the room. But we don't want animosity, so we give it to a Kohen. It's an objective criteria.
Again, I'm not sure what the question is. The question is, are we allowed to have more than one?
We allow to have more than one shul so close to one another, or is it absolutely forbidden?
Can you have 2 minyanim at the same time in the same shul?
Can you have 2 minyanim at the same time in the same shul? I don't see any problem with that. Maybe it's less a berov am v'adrat melech, but a problem on the level we're dealing with today, I don't think so. So, amongst many things, the Gemara there says the following words that I believe are very, very critical for our shir. The Gemara says the following: Ma'arvin bebayit yashan mipnei darkei shalom. What does that mean to anyone? Yes, I'm bringing it back. Anyone know what that means? You do an Eruv Chatzerot, and you put it in Avi's house every single week. In 1 week, you decide to change, and you put it into Harold's house. The Gemara says, don't do that. Halachically, it's fine. Why? Mishum Chashada. People will start thinking something's wrong with Avi. His kashrus is no good or whatever, or he's going to tarnish the Eruv. We don't want people to start talking about Avi in a derogatory way. So the Eruv Chatzerot continues to be in Avi's house. Says the Maharik, one of the Rishonim on this, Ba'ilai Zeh Rav Natan. Rav Natan came to me. Anyone here named Natan? Nobody? All right, so let's tell the truth. From Ro. היותכם מבקשים להשיג גבול עולם אשר גבלו ראשונים על דבר בית הכנסת אשר עמדה בביתו זה ימים רמים לפי דבריו. Reb Nosson had a shul in his house, and now they want to make a new shul. And they asked the Ma'arik, is this mutter? And he says no. Why? Because what are people going to begin to say? That something's wrong with poor Rep Natan. That's why they left this house after davening there for so many years. And thus the Shulchan Aruch paskins. Mi shaya bebeito beteknesset yamim rabim. Ena tzibur reshaim l'shanoto bebayit acher. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins based on the Maharik in this Gemara. That if the shul is in one place, you can't make what we call a breakaway from that shul. So again, Avi, we're not talking about lechatchila when you plan a city or where you plan a community having shuls in different places. This particular source is talking about you all davened in one place, and now there's a breakaway. So you're saying there is a problem, there is a breakaway, let's get to it, if there's an objective need. So indeed, if you look in the Achronim on this halacha, namely, when the Achronim in the 17th century after the Shulchan Aruch was published had to deal with this question, they came up with three different points of view. And you can well imagine what they are, even without looking at the screen. One would say totally forbidden to do a breakaway. And the others would say, maybe allowed, if there's a good reason. Right, Bruce? Whatever the reason might be. Says the Magen Avraham, totally forbidden. Afilu b'makom sheyesh ksat tam l'shanato, the green on the screen, ein meshanin mipnei chashada. We're worried that you may say that. Avi, do you mind muting yourself, please? Avi, do you mind muting yourself? Can you mute him, Avi? Can you mute him, Bruce? No, we can't mute. Okay, Avi, do you mind muting? Thanks. Anyway, the Magen Avraham says, Afilu b'makom, that there's a good reason to separate. We don't like the guy. He's screaming at us. He makes us daven at 7 o'clock in the morning. We want to daven at 8:30. Good reasons. You still can't leave that shul or that home. Mipnei chashada, you're going to start saying something's wrong with the guy. V'achanami, and not only will you say something's wrong with him, you'll say something's wrong with his whole house, with his whole family. Because that's the way Lashon Hara works. You start with the person and you go on. So the Magen Avraham says, totally forbidden. No such thing as a breakaway. Breakaway, absolutely not forbidden. Forbidden in all circumstances. That's the way the Magen Avraham learns the sugya. So I repeat myself, Bruce, once again. Let's say there is a problem. Still, the Magen Avraham says, I quote, Afilu b'makom sheyesh k'tzat tam l'shanoto ein mishanin. However, when Bruce learns the Magen Avraham, he says, why did the Magen Avraham add in an adjective here? What did he add in?
K'tzat.
Ooh, so others say, wait. That's if you have no good reason, you know. No good reason would be, you want to make a breakaway because you want to start davening Shabbos morning at 8:45 and the minyan starts at 8:30. That's tzat, Tom. However, let's say there's a big reason. He wants to start at 7 o'clock, you want to start at 9 o'clock. He wants to daven long, you want to daven short. Those are big reasons. So indeed, the Magen Avraham contemplates this. And says in the purple part of your screen, Gam yachol omar, she'ino rotzo lalechet lemerachok lebeit haknesset, af shescharo yoter. The Maharik says, that's the whole basis of what we're talking about. Well, if there's a good reason, such as the shul is far away, maybe you can make a breakaway. Second reason, im miktzat rotzin lipalel b'makom acher, reshain kivan shegam bebeito mitpalelim ktzat. If there's a breakaway, but you can maintain two shuls, maybe that would be okay. So, if one point of view is no such thing as a breakaway, the second one is you need to have a good excuse. Two examples of good excuses, the shul is far, or you want to make a breakaway, but the shul, the original one, will still have people davening there. You won't eradicate the original shul. Okay? And now right away you're going to start saying... Pardon, Avi?
What about reducing if you have your other minyan instead of having 100 people?
Exactly. So Avi's learning correctly. He says, I look at the Magen Avraham. Kivan shegam bebeito mitpalelim k'tzat. Well, how much is k'tzat? Let's remember, less people, less membership dues. It's not eradicating it, but it's making it far more difficult. What's the level of difficulty that you would say usher? And what's the level of difficulty that you'd say no problem? Exactly what the post can deal with. So the first point of view is no such thing as a breakaway. The second point of view is if you have a good reason, be it distance or be it, even if you break away, you still have people left. The Levush, again, this is exactly the generation after the Shulchan Aruch. The Levush seems to say, Rav Mordechai Yaffe, that this is only in a situation where someone's davening in a private home. But, im rotzim livnot beit kneset kavua lechulan, b'makom shehu shel kulam reshaim. This doesn't apply to a shul, namely, you can't break away from a private home because people will say that something's wrong with the balabayit, with the head of that household, or with members of that household. But if you're davening in a shul and you want to make another shul, says the Levush, no problem. No problem. So this whole halacha has nothing to do with breakaways from shul to shul. Says the Pitchei Tshuva, not there but in Choshen Mishpat. The Pitchei Tshuva is like an encyclopedia of all the achronim from the time the Shulchan Aruch was published until his generation. The Pitchei Tshuva says, Hadin shel Levush nami emet. It's true. Im nishar gamkein, habeit hakneset bebayit hayashan lemi sherotzeh. So, indeed, according to the Levush, who is the most mekel on this question, breakaways are allowed from shul to a new shul if the original shul still has people davening there. So, to sum up this part of the shir, you can't break away from a place that people's been davening, because people will start saying something's wrong with that shul. And there's three points of view we saw. One, totally usher. Two, allowed if you have a good excuse, be it physical distance or be it the fact that the shul still functions, it's so big that you can make another shul. And point number three, you can always break away from a shul as long as the original shul stays. Those are the three points of view on this question. So, I have to say this question is sort of on the tangent, because the bottom line is, when you make breakaways, usually you do have a good reason, and usually the original shul is able to function, and the whole question is obvious question, well, will they have more difficulty or not? So at least two out of the three poskim that we mentioned allow it. This is less of an issue. But the next screen is going to be more of an issue. Opposite, Bruce. Opposite. The Levush said this whole thing is about minyanim in private homes, because people will say something's wrong with the person of that home. But if it's a shul, it's less of a problem.
It's not in a house. It's out on the street. There's three minyanim out on the street. No house to worry about.
So, if you look here, I didn't quote, there's a tshuva of the Shev Yaakov quoted in the Pitchei Tshuva on top of the screen. Listen to this. Okay? Enactment in the city. Shelo yasu minyan babayit. Rak yelchu lebeit hakneset. Im lo motzei Shabbos kodesh and motzei yantiv. So motzei Shabbos mairiv, you can make on the street. But beyond that, they made like enactments. You can't daven in private homes. Everyone should come to shul. That is the halacha. You should preferably daven with a minyan in a shul. That is the halacha. But, you know, people like private homes for whatever reasons. It's a faster davening, it's more cozy, it's less people. And they even said they're going to give a knas. Now, what is that based on? I debate, is that just a specific enactment in a specific place at a specific time? Or is the Shev Yaakov, quoted by the Pitchei Tshuva, printed on the bottom of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, teaching us for all generations that having breakaways is a bad idea, even to the extent of having just a minyan and not another shul?
Again, we're dealing with the breakaway question. I thought the issue was, can each apartment building have a minyan? buildings right next to each other. Is there some problem with
We're not that? Dealing with that yet, Bruce. You're getting ahead of yourself. We're dealing with breakaway. You daven in one lobby, and then one day you make a new minion. And we dealt with it, and we had three different points of view, but let's go on to the main issue. The main issue is, can or can't we have a situation of three shuls within 100 meters of each other? Is it a good thing? Because, quite frankly, it shows Jews like davening. They like davening so much. They made three different shuls. Who says this? Look at the purple. No other than the Rama. So the Rama in Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat says, in the name of the Rivosh, one of the Rishonim, Ben Sheshet, Sfardi Rishon, Im rotzim livnot lahem beit knesset acher, or yichidim abayim livnot lahem beit knesset, ein acherin yecholim lichot biyadam, vehamoche ra'ui lenezifa. So says the Ramah in the name of the Rivosh, building shuls are great. Not only building shuls are great, but if you, Bruce, say, I don't want a shul in front of my house, it blocks my view. Have you ever heard that one? It blocks my view, says the Rivosh, quoted by the Rama. You should be reprimanded. You should say, Baruch Hashem, my view is a shul. Oh, beautiful. I love people parking their cars Friday night in front of my house and leaving it there for 25 hours. Oh, 3-day Yontiv Avi. I love having all these cars in front of my house for the 3-day Yontiv, not moving. Baruch Hashem, it's beautiful. I love the fact that there's a 7 o'clock minyan after the 6 o'clock minyan and people are coming out and going in. And, oh, I love it. What can be better than looking outside and seeing endless Jews wanting to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu together in a minyan, saying Dvarim Shebekdusha, Kadosh Kedusha Baruch Hu, leaning on a Monday. Says the Rama, if you complain, Ra'ui L'Nizifa, we can end the shir here and say Kadosh. Right? That's the Rama. However, the Rama, in my opinion, is alone on this. Why? Look in the blue. Second point of view. The Pitchei Tshuva quotes the Pachad Yitzchak. Who was the Pachad Yitzchak? Do not say Rav Yitzchak Hutner. Yes, he wrote the Pachad Yitzchak as well. But that was the 20th century. Harold, that was Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, in Brooklyn, and then in Israel. That is not the Pachad Yitzchak that's quoted in the Pitchei Tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch. Who's the Pitchei Tshuva? Who's the Pachad Yitzchak? Rav Yitzchak Liberenti. He was an Italian posek. And he writes in the name of a few mechabrim, the Ima Beit HaKnesset HaChadash Yigrom Hezek LeBeit HaKnesset HaYashan Yecholim La'akev Aleihen Shelo Yivnuhu Mishum Kapastei Chiyutei. Avi, this is your point of view. The Pachad Yitzchak from Italy says that if the new shul will cause damage to the old shul, then you can't make a new shul. But if the two are able to function, it's okay. The Rama. So the Pitchei Tshuva comes along and has a caveat to the Rama. Beautiful to have shuls. Beautiful to have Jewish institutions on one condition. That institution number two doesn't ruin institution number one. Now, here comes Bruce's question. But Rabbi, this is just shuls. What about a minyan outside my house? Listen to this. The Magen Avraham quotes the Knesset HaGdola. Again, I love when Ashkenazic poskim quote non-Ashkenazic poskim. Shahakahal yecholim ligzor shelo yitpalelu asara chutz lebeit haKnesset mishum marit ayin. Mipnei ha'umot sheyisperu shehem rabim. And mipnei ha'yechidim she'en notnim ha'misim u'mipalelim b'yud b'makom acher. The Magen Avraham says that you can make an enactment not to daven on the street, not to daven in private homes, for two reasons. Number one, you get money from the government for a religious institution, and they're going to give it to your private home and not to the shul because they'll think this is where people daven. After all, they're davening outside, so they see them. The people inside, they don't see. Number two, Many people won't pay membership dues to a local shul because it's much easier to daven outside. So says the Magen Avraham that indeed this concern of the Pachad Yitzchak is a real one. You can't make another shul if you're going to ruin the original shul. So therefore, you have to think when you go ahead and you want to make a community, how many shuls can logically, financially exist in this particular community? So that's the Pitchei Tshuva. So point number one, the Rama says you can make as many shuls as you want. It's beautiful. The Pitchei Tshuva says on one condition that they can all survive. But if too many shuls means a strain on communal funds, each shul would like you to pay 10,000 shekel a year to survive, that's a problem and you shouldn't do it. But outside of that, you can. Opinion number three is the Radbaz. Who's the Radbaz? Anyone want to guess? I'm sorry? Rabbi David ben Zimra. We're talking about the generation after the Shulchan Aruch. Not the Ridbaz. That's the 20th century chief rabbi of Tzfat, formerly from Chicago, until the mafia tried to kill him and he ran away. Very interesting story in the history of American Jewry, how a rabbi comes from Lithuania, from Slutsk, to Chicago to become the chief rabbi, starts putting his foot down on kashrus, the mafia gets hold of him, locks him in a refrigerator, alleged, but, you know, even alleged story maybe have a strain of truth. He somehow gets out of the refrigerator and leaves Chicago on Shabbos morning, Bruce, Pikuach Nefesh, and comes to Tzfat to become the chief rabbi of Tzfat, to this day in Tzfat. I was there on a Shabbos, I was on Rechov HaRidbaz. And I looked at the sign and I said, wow, do you know how much Jewish history, American, Israeli, are in this sign? He was one of the people that were very much against Rav Kook's, I would say, tolerable attitude to the non-religious. That's the Ridbaz of the 20th century, who wrote a Perush on Yerushalmi. The Radbaz are a few hundred years before him, generation after the Shulchan Aruch. Svardi Posek says like this, he was the chief rabbi in Egypt. Right? You can throw a question at me right now. How can you be a chief rabbi in Egypt? Jews are not supposed to go back to Egypt. Can anyone tell me who was the chief rabbi in Egypt in the 20th century? Rav Ovadia Yosef. So I'm assuming that if these two great rabbis were rabbis there, there's a reason. Please mute. Please, whoever's phone is ringing, please mute. Says the Radbaz, V'chol ze bizman, shekulam lei v'chadu, shekilusan ole yafeh. Why do you say don't separate from one another? That's only if everyone's living together in harmony. Namely, we all come to shul, we all are in peace with one another. Aval, im chalak libam. What does that mean, im chalak libam? Anyone? Take a heart and divide it in the middle. What does that mean halachically? It means if they're fighting with each other. If there's fights, right? Example, this is like a typical Efrat-oriented fight. Should the shir be in English or in Hebrew? So the language of the land is Hebrew, so we pask in Hebrew. Okay, next. Should the announcements be both in English and Hebrew? That's a big fight. Bunch of people say we're in Israel. Hebrew, why should I stay in shul for another 5 minutes to hear it in English? Others say, yeah, I don't understand the Hebrew, I want to hear English. Big fight. Next fight. Should we sing a lot during davening or shouldn't we? Certain people say I daven better without singing. Other people say I love singing, it gets me better kavana. And there's a big fight about it. Shall we say mishabeirachs or not? Big fight. Should we say the tefillah l'shlomo medina? Huge fight. And the biggest fight of them all, this is like the fight of the fight of the fights. Should we say av harachamim? On Shabbos Mevarchim Chodesh Iyar. This is like the fight that takes all the fights and makes them nothing, pale by comparison. We all know that the minhag of Am Yisrael is to fight about that question. So, what? That's a nice way to take care of the fight. All right, you want to do it in Hebrew? Go fundraise in Hebrew. And that will take care of the fight. Interesting way of taking care of it. Never thought of that, Bruce. Very nice. Very, very sharp. But if there's too many fights, better everyone should separate and daven alone. But says the Radbaz, but don't think for a moment that I think this is preferable. And he quotes the Medrash that we just quoted. Namely, I like to see people in peace with one another. But, im iefshar, they don't want to be at peace with one another. Ela shetamid, hem mitkotetin, vehem bemachloket. Dacha, Rabbi Miuto. Better they daven separately. So says the Radbaz, remember the Magen Avraham beginning of the Shir? If there's a good reason, this is a good reason. They're fighting with each other. They're fighting with each other. You can separate, probably even if it's a strain financially. Because fighting with each other, you can't make a shul function. Just in case you think this is a Sephardic point of view, the Chatam Sofer, Hungary, originally from Germany, comes along and says in the 19th century, Ay, ha-perud, people fighting with each other. Ay, na lanu. Kiboshnu v'nichlamnu. This is terrible. People can't daven in the same shul. Aval manase shechatatenu negarmu she'i efshar lachnisan al ken yitpardu. If you have no choice, separate. So I want to make it clear. Having three shuls within 100 meters of one another because they can't be in the same building because they fight with one another. This is allowed, but far from preferable. It's what I call tolerable. Namely, we tolerate it. But both the Radbaz and the Chatam Sofer say, terrible thing. Terrible. So 3 points of view so far. Rama says, build as many shuls as you want. Petri Tshuva says, you can build as many shuls as you want. But in the name of the Pachad Yitzchak, as long as you don't ruin shul number one, they can both maintain each other. Comes the Radbaz and say, maybe they can't maintain each other, but if you're fighting, that's a good reason to separate. The Re'eim, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi. Many of you know Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi from his Perush on Rashi on the Chumash. Great Perush. There was a gentleman here in Efrat, a very unique individual. Rav Yosef Yedidyahu Klausner, Zechron Levracha, unfortunately died a few years ago. He used to give me Svarim. He had a, I think, photographic memory. When he finished learning, he used to give me Svarim. So I have the Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi on Rashi from him. So I always think of him when I quote Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi. This is his responsum, not his perush on Rashi. In other words, Harold, this is not the Friday night drusha. This is the halacha shir Shabbos afternoon. So Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi is giving a halacha shir. And he basically says the following. You know when you can separate? She'ein abayit mechila otam. When the shul gets too crowded. Have you ever been to such shuls? It's crowded. When it's physically crowded, you can separate. But he's very clear. Maybe other good reasons you can separate. It's crowded. Some people daven fast, some people daven slow, and each person has kavana in a different way. That's a good reason to separate. What's the only thing he says you can't separate for? For exactly what the Radbaz allowed. She'einan michamat chiluka deyot shebeneihem. Namely, the shul can't, it's too crowded, too noisy, good reason to separate. Ashkenaz Fard, maybe good reason to separate, I'm not sure, but let's assume. What's not a good reason to separate, Bruce? If they can't be at peace with one another, Jews should be at peace with one another. Come to some sort of pshara. What's pshara in English? Compromise, thank you. And then you can be with one another, but that's not a good reason to separate. Interesting. Exactly what the Radbaz allowed, the Ra'am says no. But he gives every other reason is okay. The Magen Avraham says explicitly, B'takneset mechila otam, as adarabah asurim liparet. So if you have a big shul, and everyone can daven there, and now you have two shuls, and they're both pretty empty, very bad. Radbaz says it should have been in one shul. But maybe we can tolerate it. You have a good reason. But not, I repeat, not if they can't get along with one another. So if the rabbi got on your nerves, and you're very mad at him, or maybe more common, the rabbitson got on your nerves, and you're more mad at her, and you want to separate, the Radbaz would say, go right ahead, because you're fighting every week. Or if you're not fighting every week, every time you see the rabbitson under your breath, you say something. We know people like that, right? But, says the Re'eim, no, that's not a reason to separate, get to some sort of peace. But if the shul physically can't have them both, then you can separate. So we have four points of view. Four points of view on this Shaila. One point of view is build as many shuls as you want. That's what seems the Ramah says in the name of the Rebush. On the total other side of the spectrum, the Re'eim says only if the shul physically, objectively can't hold everyone. But if it's a more emotional need, like we're not at peace with one another, no. And the middle points of view are the Radbaz that says exactly that. If you're not at peace with one another, you can separate. And the Pitrei Tshuva says you can separate if indeed shul number two doesn't ruin shul number one. Now, just to give Avi what he was looking for, indeed, the Minchat Yitzchak, this is Rav Yitzchak Weiss, our generation, when he died, my Rebbe, Rav Amital, Zichrono Levracha, was very upset. Why was he very upset? Exactly for what happened Motzei Shabbos, but opposite. On Motzei Shabbos, the chief rabbi reprimanded one of the great rabbis of the religious Zionist community, saying he has no Yirat Shamayim. A disgusting comment, I must say. I'm still totally shaken by it. But to make a long story short, this is the opposite. Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss was a posek, adir, in the Eidah Haredit, and he died, and he wrote a lot of responsum that we quote. And at his Levaya, only Haredim went to the Levaya. And my Rebbe Rav Amital was very upset and said, why only Haredim going to a Levaya of a great rabbi? The Torah is one. We may disagree on our relationship to the state. We may disagree on our relationship to the army. We may even disagree, Harold, on our relationship to secular studies. But we don't disagree on Torah. Torah's Torah. So he doesn't understand why people didn't go to his Levaya. And I take that to heart. So I try very hard to give the proper credence and respect to all great rabbis of our generation and former generations. So this is 20th century. And he says that the Revush that allowed as many shuls as possible said explicitly on one condition, Bipnei Yishuv Beit HaKnesset Shelo Techarev, that the original shul won't be eradicated. Harei Muchach Mitvarov, Deheicha Te'if Shal Lekayim Shneim, Az Mochin Milechalek. So again, this comes up again and again. You can separate if the shuls all can maintain themselves. But if not, it's a problem. So to sum up until now, four points of view. Make as many shuls as you want. View number one. View number two, only if the shuls can maintain themselves if you separate. View number three, if you're fighting with each other, you can separate. And view number four, if you're fighting with each other, make peace. And you can separate only if objectively the shuls objectively can hold everyone. It's getting tight. It's getting crowded. Now, to sum up this year, let's see a case study. Who is someone, in your opinion, that's going to deal with this issue contemporarily? So I haven't seen shuvas written yet about Efrat, per se, or the community we saw at the beginning of this year, but let's just say in America, breakaways happen a lot. They've happened. They're still happening. We all know there's articles written about the Shtiblach syndrome, where people make small little shtibles where they feel better than the big shuls. So who would be the posek that dealt with this question? Take a wild guess. Blah, 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 blah. You said correctly. Say it out loud. Rav Moshe Feinstein died in 1986. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the day he died, I remember like today, I learned in the Hebrew Academy of Long Beach, New York, where I was a student in the third grade, Tanit Esther, 1986. I come to school, and all the Rebbeim of the school are like depressed. And I asked my teacher why, and he said that Rav Moshe died. And like an idiot, like a dumbbell, like an ignoramus from the moronic planet, I said, who's Rav Moshe? I said, I didn't know who Rav Moshe was. A third grader, 1986, didn't know. Alex, you're listening? Bennett's here with us. Bennett, Rav Moshe was one of his Rabbeim Muvhakim. Bennett, you know what if I would have told my teacher that I went to pray yesterday in the Roman Catholic Church, he maybe would be nicer to me. But I said I didn't know Rav Moshe was. My gosh, did he let me have it. He said, who's Rav Moshe? Who's Rav Moshe? Give me your lunchbox. I could have sworn he's going to take my lunch and throw it out as a punishment. So, how would I know? I don't know. So I give him I didn't have a lunchbox already at that age. You don't have a lunchbox. That's like babyish. You have a lunch bag. Remember those lunch bags? The paper bags? So I give him my lunch bags. He starts taking out the fruit, the sandwich, and finally he gets to the Hershey bar. And he says, you see this Hershey bar? You know why you ate it? Only because Rav Moshe allowed it. What did he mean? Cholavakum. Company milk. Supervised. You can well understand that, first of all, from that day on, every time I see a Hershey's bar, I think of Rav Moshe Feinstein. You can also understand that because I got such a zetz in my head, I started to learn about Rav Moshe. By the way, that is one of my most precious Rabbeim I've ever had, who told me that. I won't say his name, because maybe people will say, oh, that's not nice. But the bottom line is, he was one of my most precious Rabbeim I've ever had. He cared about his students. He couldn't believe his student didn't know who Rav Moshe was. Believe me, today I know who Rav Moshe is. So Rav Moshe Feinstein died in 1986. He ultimately dealt with breakaway, and he says the following. This is like exactly a case study of what we've been dealing with, and I hate to say it, you could probably think of shuls that answer this criteria. I, Rav Moshe, wrote dates, wrote names. I left that all out. B'davar anashim shalchu mibet ha-knesset shel Rebbe Yechad, shi'palelu etzlo, v'yistu b'gvulo b'knesset acher. Exactly what we dealt with at the beginning of the shir, a breakaway. They davened by a certain rabbi, and the rabbi offended them. Okay? You want a case of this? I'll tell you a case. A rabbi ultimately put up a sign in a shul that said that bringing kids who make noise to shul is like parking in two parking spaces. Taking one car and parking in two parking spaces. Well, you can well understand that everyone that had little kids were offended. Right? All right. They keep chuparnasato. They made a new shul, which means his parnasa, he's a rabbi, gets part of the membership dues, went down. They gam huzal shivyo bet haknesset shelo yidezeh asher yifshalim charobelov hefset gadol. Now his shul is worth less because less people daven there, right? This is not a 1,000-member shul anymore. This is a 400-member shul. Exactly what Avi was so sensitive to. So, we're talking about loss, financial loss, right? Ki im lo ayu miyazdim b'kneset acher, kol mishaya dar sham, v'av mishaya bar charkach lador sham, amit palel etzlo. If you wouldn't make a new shul, then everyone would daven in that shul. So, case scenario, across the street from me, the first of the three shuls, everyone would daven there on a Friday night, on a Shabbos morning, because there is no other shuls. B, now that you made another shul, the original shul is worth less, and C, the salary of the rabbi went down. Well, you don't break away for nothing, so look in the orange. Why did they break away? They gave three reasons. Reason number one, the rabbi's davening stinks. We don't like his nigunim. We don't like the length of davening. Davening is not pleasant. There's nigunim being used that no one knows. You know, last Friday night I was chazen because the minag is that if you have a yortzeit, you're chazen on a Friday or a Shabbos morning, machlokes. The bottom line is I was chazen Friday night. And I really, truly wanted to use a nigun of Tzantz Hasidim for Lo Tevoshi. I'm happy to sing it to you after the shir. But I looked around and I said, no one knows the nigun. So maybe I'd enjoy it, but 15 other people wouldn't. This rabbi did the opposite. It's my niggun. I'm going to sing it because I enjoy it. One, two. Gam mitzad shedarko shel harav lekalel ulehafchid ulevazot. Kamo shirai zeh pama pa'amim shezeh kasheh lisbol. The rabbi, his way of running his congregation, his, I would say, character of leadership, Avi, is to lekalel, lehafchid, velevazot. Do I need to translate? This is like a rabbi who's giving a speech, and two people are speaking while he's speaking, you know, whispering to each other, and he says, hey, can you shut up? Not nice. Or he gets up on a Shabbos morning and he says, you're all a bunch of sinners because you come to shul late. It's not pleasant to hear the rabbi talk like that. The gam she'eze me'amit palelim sham zilzelu et rabam atzadik she'iv shalayim lisboze. You know, the rabbi got up and said, everyone that goes to Uman for Rosh Hashanah is a chote, he's a machti, he's an idiot, he's a dumbbell, he's a moron, he's against Judaism. And there's 20 people in the shul that go to Uman every year. They don't want to be in that shul, so they made a new shul. What did the rabbi say to his defense, going back to the green? The rabbi said to his defense that, first of all, I don't do that. They only did that once. Okay, once he let off, a rabbi can let off steam once in his life. By the way, I totally disagree. The minute the rabbi loses his temper, he shouldn't be a rabbi. You cannot lose your temper as a rabbi. Different shear. But that's what he said. Well, it was only once. Upam sheni, and the second time, I love that. I only did it once. But regarding the second time, right, this is like saying, I shot in the air, and then I went ahead and I made sure, and I looked around and I saw who got hurt from it. What do you mean? If you're shot in the air, no one should get hurt from it. So if you only screamed once, how can it be a second time? Says the rabbi, oh, the second time, lo yayin yanafkada, raki tovarut ba'alma. I screamed, I yelled, I shouted, but it wasn't screaming and yelling and shouting, really. I did it as a means of rhetoric speaking. All right, you can understand that they're not getting along with this rabbi, and they make a breakaway. What does Rav Moshe say? Well, based on our shir, what do you say? Is there good reasons to make a breakaway? Well, let's see. Can you maintain two shuls? Maybe, yes, no. Are they at peace with one another? No, Radbaz would say fine. Can the shul hold them all? Maybe yes, so maybe then the Radbaz would say no. But then other poskim, like the Re'em, would say yes. What does Rav Moshe say? Rav Moshe, I have to say, when you read his tshuva, you can prepare a whole shir. Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita says that when he was doing his tests to become a rabbi in Yoredeya, he would learn the sugya and then open up the tshuvas of Rav Moshe and guess the answer. And then he would look at the answer, and Rav Moshe would shoot a gemara from Besechet Bechorot and something you never thought of. So that's what's about to happen. I looked at the tshuva, and I said, oh, Rav Moshe is going to say this and that and that and this, exactly what we talked about here in the shir. Well, it turns out he talks about some of it, but not all of it. Take a look. He brings three different reasons why you cannot break away from this rabbi. Number one, you're taking away his salary. Your red lamb will not have a row in the green. Number two, in the yellow, the minion becomes smaller. The minion becomes smaller, then there's less money going in. The shul's going to have a very big difficulty to maintain themselves. And then he says, and just because you don't like the nigunim, it's not a reason to take away someone's salary. Lo shayach latir b'shvila ta'anot, v'shinuya nischaot b'miksat, v'shinuya nigun, v'tfila Rosh Hashanah v'yom Kippur, taking away someone's salary. 1 second, Bruce. And number three, exactly what we said at the beginning of the shir, you can't break away because people would say someone's wrong with that rabbi. You know, maybe the rabbi's not Jewish. But he says, regarding reason number three, if there was a good reason to break away, as we saw, like the Magen Avraham says, the shul is far away or whatnot, that would be okay. But because of reasons one and two, that you're taking away the salary or the shul's general capacity to run itself, membership dues goes down, those two reasons, even if it's uncomfortable, you have to stay in the shul. That's what Rav Moshe says. So, case study, this is where Rav Moshe paskins. I think we could maybe think of other poskim that would say otherwise, but this is a very real question. Yes, Bruce?
So, I'm not discussing a formal group breakaway.
First of all, when you say the individual, I decided to go daven somewhere else. If you're one of those daveners that come on a regular basis, people will notice. People will notice, and they'll ask, well, why are you going to the other shul? And it may start a trend of people that will go to the other. I'll give you an example. There was a gentleman that davened by a Hasidic Rebbe, loved the Hasidic Rebbe, the Hasidic Rebbe loved him. But the Hasidic Rebbe had no youth groups. When his child got to grade 2 or 3, he wanted his child to have youth groups, so he went to the other shul in the neighborhood, already established, not taking away salary from either. Just him, he went. The problem was, he was an individual that came to the daily minyan every day. He was the individual that was very active in the shul. All of a sudden, he's not there. He didn't write a letter, he didn't write an email, he didn't post it on Facebook, but Bruce, he's not there. So they asked him, hey, why are you not coming? And the answer was, because you don't have youth groups, and I want my kids to have youth groups. Okay. Well, guess what happened?
They made a youth group.
Well, that would be great, but that's not what happened. What happened was 5 other families said, good idea. Well, 5 other families is no longer an individual. I think an individual has a lot of power. It's not just one guy not davening there anymore. Gentlemen, it's 10 o'clock. I believe the next year is about to begin, right, Bruce?
Yes.
I'll just sum up by saying, if you're going to do a breakaway, you're going to have 3 shuls within 100 meters, then A, you better know what you're doing, because there could be Yisurim involved. And B, even if you know what you're doing, you have to make it clear, in my opinion, why you're breaking away, or why it's so important to have these many shuls. Namely, I think it's extremely vital to make clear to the community that either the shuls in character are different, even if they're all Ashkenazi, one is fast, one is slow, one's with a rabbi, one's not a rabbi, or B, make it clear why we did it. Namely, the shul was too crowded, or whatnot. If not, this is what's going to happen. People are going to walk by, they're going to see 3 shuls davening, the Lechadodi, the Yidid Nefesh, everyone's davening. And you say, this community is so in machlokas. No one can get along with one another. Look what's happening over here. So I say, having so many shuls may be a blessing or may be a curse. You have to make it clear why you have various shuls. And I'll just end with an example where it wasn't clear. I once asked in a certain community, why is there a shul next to a shul? And the answer was, because we're not like that shul. That is the most stupidest answer I've ever heard. Because I walked away with all the chashashot that I mentioned in this year. Oh, you're not like that shul? Oh, meaning you made a whole shul out of hate. But what are you? What do you stand for? What do you stand for? Answer, we're not like them. Well, you're not like them. What are you? You have to be able to make it clear. So once again, I sum up the shir in one sentence. Breaking away and making various shuls can be a blessing or can be a curse. You know what the difference will be? If you make clear why there are various shuls. Thank you all for listening. Should be Aliyat Neshama for Rachel Bad Yitzchak Halevi and Mirza Hashem. And I thank Rabbi Adler for giving up his slot on a Monday morning for me, so I can give the shir on the Yortzeit itself, which means on Wednesday you'll have a real shir by Rabbi Adler, not this letting off steam that I just did.
Can you send me the PowerPoint?
With pleasure, Avi. Send me a WhatsApp or an email and I'll send it to you.
Now,
oh, good. So I'll send it to you right away. No names, but okay. Take care, everyone. Have a good day.